Tatir Tzerura, Tatir Tzerura, Kabel Rinat, Rinat Am Chasag Venu, Tareinu Nora.
Hello, and welcome to Contact Chai. Today's episode is a Shabbat replay from our virtual Friday night service on May 17th. Rabbi Lizzie delivered a drash on the complicated relationship of disability justice and the Torah. How can we make sense of a mitzvah which appears to exclude people with a disability? We must first begin by considering the examples of two great sacred texts, Leviticus and the hit TV show, Glee. Take it away, Rabbi.
I was very happy that this week I had the opportunity to think back to an episode of Glee. Maybe you remember this show way back from the early 2010s. In this particular episode, let me set the stage, 18 episodes into the second season of the hit TV show Glee, Rachel, a Jewish character on the show, played by actress Lea Michele, decides or contemplates getting a nose job, right? So this was a 2010s drama about a high school glee club, like a, you know, dance singing show choir group type thing. And anyway, Rachel suffers an injury to her nose during practice that gives her the opportunity to have reconstructive surgery to fix her deviated septum, which her doctor and a friend with a cute little button nose both think is a good idea to both fix the deviated septum and her big Jewish nose. And so the episode becomes an exploration of how teenagers deal with having differences from some kind of ideal of beauty or perfection that they think that the world holds. Right, some kids are embarrassed about a physical feature of their body, like their weight or their eye color. Some are embarrassed about their need to wear glasses or be in a wheelchair. Some have a mental illness that they struggle with. And at the beginning of the episode, there are a few popular kids who are in the closet about being gay or lesbian. Everyone is struggling with how or whether to let people know the truth about them. You know, and often the truth is something about which we would say, like, what's the big deal? But of course, to them, it's a big deal. This insecurity about sharing one's true self or sharing something that you feel might make you different or unacceptable is unfortunately reinforced in this week's Torah portion and more. There are a few lines in this week's Torah portion that have deeply challenged readers for millennia having to do with this precise issue. The conversation emerges through some pretty challenging verses in Leviticus 21. So, quote, the Lord said to Moses, say to Aaron, the high priest, for the generations to come, none of your descendants who have a defect may come near to offer sacrifices to his God. No man who has a defect may come near, no man who is blind or lame or disfigured or deformed, no man with a crippled foot or hand, or who is hunchback or dwarf, who has an eye defect or who has a festering running sore or a damaged testicle. No descendant of Aaron the priest who has any defect is to come near to present the food offerings to the Lord. He must not go near the curtain or approach the altar and so desecrate my sanctuary. I am the Lord who makes them holy. Oof, right? This is so hard to read every year. The Torah seems to be saying that a priest or Kohen is only allowed to do all of the temple service on behalf of the community in public if they are physically perfect. And not just physically perfect, but without, you know, like a without a festering wound or a crippled foot or a lazy eye, but also functionally perfect, also not blind, you know, not walk with a limp. This prohibition includes damaged testicles, which also seems to imply even that hidden or invisible illnesses that you can't readily see are also defects and disabilities as well that would disqualify you from temple service. This is one of many places where the words on the page in the Torah directly contradict a value we hold dear today and would seem to confirm the cruel feeling that so many of us live with, that if we show up with our differences in the world, we won't be accepted, right? Could the Torah really be saying that human beings with physical and mental differences aren't fit to serve as priests? Or certainly as fit to serve as priests, as people who don't have those differences? And if that is what the text is saying, and you disagree, and I imagine you probably disagree, then like, what do we do with this book so full of ancient and in some cases deeply problematic verses that categorically exclude people who we don't think should be excluded from mainstream public life? And you know, we've wrestled with this in other contexts with other kinds of cases of this sort of thing. This is a particular example this week. Rabbi Lauren Tuckman, who is a beautiful thinker and teacher, who I've had the pleasure of studying with, who happens to be blind, she writes on this week's Torah portion, "One could ignore this passage, given that Kohanim no longer enjoy the privileged status once afforded to them in the aftermath of the temple's destruction, or we might be horrified by this passage, but also comfort ourselves with the knowledge that no longer are individuals with disabilities explicitly forbidden from ritual or communal leadership, as evidenced by the tiny but steadily growing cohort of rabbis, rabbinical students, cantors, and others who are bravely and boldly exercising spiritual leadership that is so desperately needed. We might think to ourselves that we are working ceaselessly for change, and that in the aftermath of the passage of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, life has improved immeasurably for individuals with disabilities in our society. We could remember that back in the day, the practice was often to euthanize babies who were born with physical deformities. So given that as an alternative, what our text describes, just not letting them serve as priests, actually sounds pretty progressive, right?" Tuckman writes, "We can look at this passage as a mere relic of its day and congratulate ourselves for moving past it." But then she says, "Can we, really?" And of course, the answer is no. We can't congratulate ourselves for moving past this kind of thinking because its presence in the Torah and the fact that we encounter it every year and every year are bothered by it alerts us to the persistent human dynamic that we are very much still wrestling with, that basic human bias against difference that shows up in our immediate visceral reactions to physical appearance, our own and that of others. Just think of how you react to seeing a pimple or some minor imperfection on your face. And certainly how we react to encountering differences in ability and physicality in ourselves and in those around us. This line in the Torah and our reaction to it is a big red warning asking us to pay closer attention. There is something we need to examine here, some kind of tikkun, healing, that we need to make. So one thing I always warn our B'nai Mitzvah students when they go into reading especially difficult passages in the Torah is to be careful, because Torah looks like it's a document of instructions, things to do, prescriptions. The Torah does contain timeless wisdom for us that has not changed in millennia, but it is actually a document describing how humans actually are. It's descriptions, not prescriptions. And so if we pay attention to these timeless truths about the human failings and shortcomings and biases that we see in the Torah, if we pay attention to those, we can learn by not repeating them. The descriptions, therefore, are as important, if not more important, than the prescriptions. And this is one of those places where we cannot read the Torah prescriptively. We have to read it descriptively. And understanding what biases the Torah is alerting us to, in doing that, we can transcend them, or at least do our absolute hardest to do better at welcoming, affirming, and loving the things that make us and the people around us different from whatever idealized, perfect, whole, false standard we're holding ourselves and others to. And to be clear, we're not doing any favors for people with disabilities or differences. Rather, we are making the world a safer, healthier, happier place for everyone, liberating all of us from false standards of beauty and body and brains that confine us. And to be clear, we are all hurt by these false ideals and standards of beauty and health. In Jonathan Haidt's new book, The Anxious Generation, he correlates the dramatic decline in teenage mental health, especially girls, not just with smartphones and social media, we all know those things are correlated, but specifically with the invention of front-facing cameras that turned selfies into a thing, especially on Instagram, but in so many other places as well, making us all newly obsessed with how our image compares to the images of others, of other filtered, adjusted, AI-infused, perfect faces and bodies we're now seeing come up in our feeds. And the more time we spend in social media, the more of those we will see, and the more we will compare ourselves to them. And this kind of social comparison to an ideal, obviously present for millennia as a feature of human society, is now available on steroids in our pockets all the time and is harming all of us in ways we can't even begin to really quantify, but begin to have a sense of. So Rabbi Ruth Adar, a reform rabbi who struggles with an invisible disability, she writes on this week's Torah portion, "I got the idea from this week's Torah portion that a person who was leading services should be physically perfect, that if I needed a cane or a wheelchair to function, I was not fit to lead a service. For years, I hid my own disability when it came to leading services, despite the fact that standing for any length of time gave me excruciating pain. As a result, I was not at my best on the Bima. I was fuzzy-minded, clouded with pain. I mispronounced words. I forgot things. I didn't give my congregation the leadership it deserved. Eventually, I decided I should not be a congregational rabbi because of the disability I struggled to hide." This is deeply sad, right? Think of all of the talented people with different kinds of hidden disabilities who have exerted great effort to keep them hidden, or talented people who have exerted great effort because the architecture of the world doesn't lend itself to assisting people with a wheelchair or a walker or hearing or vision disabilities share space. And so often the effort that they have to exert to bring their talent or brilliance ends up coming in spite of or overcoming their disability or difference instead of simply in the presence of it or through the wisdom and beauty arrived at through living with it over years. Rabbi Julia Watts Belzer, who is a professor in theology and religious studies at Georgetown, wrote in a book recently, that won the National Jewish Book Awards called Loving Your Own Bones, Disability Wisdom and the Spiritual Subversiveness of Knowing Ourselves Whole. And she said about writing that book, rather than asking the question, what religious texts have to say about disability, we instead should be asking, what does disability offer to Jewish tradition, to spiritual life, and to the practice of building meaningful community? Right? What do specifically the things that are being identified in our religious texts as problematic, but that we know are not, that we know the problem is actually in the perception of the eye of the beholder, what does that actually have to teach us? Not what do our religious texts say about it? What does it have to teach all of us about the practice of building meaningful community? Because the truth is, as she points out, disabilities and differences are all over the Torah. And now I'm expanding to include all manner of differences that distinguish a person from some idealized norm, which in their day was some version of able-bodied, cis, hetero man, although probably not white because we are talking about the ancient Middle East. Our patriarch Isaac was blind. Our patriarch Jacob walked with a limp after a wrestling accident. with an angel. Our patriarch, Joseph, was a flamboyant, multicolored coat-wearing fashionista who had no interest in the advances of his sexy female employer. Maybe into guys? And then you have Moses, who expresses his self-doubt about his own fitness for leadership because he speaks with a stutter. Watts Belzer points out that Moses' brother Aaron stands in as the first reasonable accommodation in the Torah, becoming an essential part of the prophet's communication team. God grants Moses the gift of signs, his staff, the plagues, which are an invitation to embrace visual language and tactile experiences rather than relying only on words. God also promises to be with Moses, to give him support. And just as God has created Moses in the first place and created his tongue, God will be with him and open his heart to help him believe that he indeed has everything he needs to lead. The truth is, the rabbis who created modern Judaism 2,000 years ago, who inherited the Torah, they understood the problem with this text, and they understood the problem here is not the person with the difference, whatever the difference is. The problem is our bias. The issue is how distracted we get by other people's differences. In the Mishnah, Rav Yehuda says the Kohen, a priest, with stains on his hands, may not give the priestly blessing, quote, because people would be inclined to stare. So Rabbi Adar writes, if in fact the reason for keeping the Kohanim with visible defects from the temple was because people will stare, then it suggests the problem is not in the disability, but in the reactions of the public to disabilities and differences, even differences as innocuous as stains on the hands. And then a few hundred years later, the rabbis go even further in counteracting the harmful implications of this Torah text we began with today, writing in the Talmud, if the Kohen is known locally and people are used to him, then there is no impediment in his participating in the service. Meaning, if people know him and know his mind and his skills, it's fine for him to serve them, despite what might disqualify him in a place where people would judge him negatively for his flaws because they didn't know him as well. Because, of course, once we know someone well, we accept them and love them, not despite their differences, but in the presence of them. They're just part of the whole person. We accept them the way that God accepts Moses, broken yet whole. Worthy as being seen as a leader, not because the differences get fixed or solved or healed, but rather by recognizing them and accommodating them so a person's wisdom and talent can flow freely. It's all any of us really want and need. So paradoxically, the Torah, plus all of the commentary from the rabbis and the Mishnah and Talmud over thousands of years, all of that together helps us see where the real work of healing and change lies, not in the person with the difference, but in the person who is distracted by it. All of us, really, in one way or another. The problem is a world that perpetuates harmful and unrealistic ideals of perfection and asks all of us to be more like that ideal and less like our beautiful, varied, imperfect selves. Rabbi Adar writes, if I am distracted by the way in which someone is different from me, by their race or their accent or the wheelchair they use, she says the fault isn't in them. Rather, it is my task to get over it, or more accurately, to get over myself. The bias or suspicion of difference is something our brains adopted millions of years ago, probably for self-protection out on the savannah, when any little change in the environment could have been dangerous. So this is something really deep in the brain, and overcoming or transcending this very human instinct is not something that happens once. It is something we practice and lovingly do again and again and help each other remember. Part of being in community is feeling safe enough to share one's real self, and in being one's real self, helping and inspiring others to feel that they can be their real, whole, imperfect selves too. Okay, so the way that episode of Glee ends, by the way, is with a big dance number, of course, in which each member of the Glee Club comes out on stage in a t-shirt that announces the very thing that we, as the viewers, knew they were self-conscious about and were trying to hide, but they are now prepared to share. And the dance number begins with the first teenage boy on stage whose t-shirt says, "Likes boys." And next to him is a Black female student whose t-shirt says, "No weave." And next to them on the stage dances an adorable guy in a hat whose t-shirt says, "Can't sing." And next to them dances an adorable guy whose t-shirt says, "Can't dance." And then a kid in glasses in a wheelchair, his t-shirt says, "Four eyes." And an Asian student's t-shirt says, "Brown eyes." Each student is modeling both embracing their own perfections, not as deficits, but as a beautiful part of their whole selves. And doing that and holding space for every other person on stage to do the same. And finally, Lea Michele walks out, dances out, wearing her t-shirt that says, "Nose," finally having decided not to fix her perfect Jewish nose. The Kotzker Rebbe, the Hasidic rabbi, used to say, "There is nothing so whole as a broken heart." And Rabbi Shefa Gold, on this week's Torah portion, writes, "When I look at nature, and I look at the human predicament of every person I meet, I cannot find something that is unblemished. The closer I look, the more imperfections I find. Everything and everyone is in process. Even the people you think are perfect." And so I want to bless you tonight. I want to bless me tonight. I want to bless all of us to experience ourselves as whole, as imperfectly perfect. I want to bless you that you can experience your face, your eyes, your ears, your nose, your mouth, your hair, your voice, your chest, your belly, your hands and your feet, all the connective tissue holding you together, all the experiences that you've had in this body. I want to bless you that you feel that they are a gift, not an accident, but an asset, not something to hide, but something to share. And in doing so, find community, find wisdom, and find the deeper spirituality and satisfaction that comes from being the person that you were put into this world to be. Because we need you just the way you are.
Shabbat Replay is a production of Mishkan Chicago. Our theme music was composed and performed by Kalman Strauss. You can always see where and when our next service will be on our calendar. There's a link in the show notes. And if you appreciated the program, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. I know you've heard it before, but it really does help. On behalf of Team Mishkan, thank you for listening.